problem, assuming there's a problem with possession, would there obviously be even more of a problem with something less than possession?
Well, my testimony in the Senate was, and it continues to be, that there is not a problem with possession, a problem by which our position is that the U.S. Supreme Court would not follow Stanley versus Georgia in the context of child pornography. They've made that clear in New York versus Ferber, that child pornography is treated differently from adult pornography.
Mm-hmm. I agree in that. Could you give me an example of what would be considered a violation of Section 9 to observe sexually explicit conduct, to obtain or view a photograph? Now, we talked about some examples in the corridor, and we talked about mens rea or mental state of mind. Could you give me some examples of what you would consider to be a violation of the section of viewing or observing?
If in the hallway I were to have material that would come under the definitions as applied in this bill, and I were to give it to someone, suppose they completely, the first time had seen this material, and instead of giving it back, or instead of turning away, or instead of calling the police, or whatever, they were to take it and look at it themselves over in the corner, and obviously look at it intentionally or knowingly, and that would be a violation of the of Section 9. If, on the other hand, they were to turn away, or to just view it inadvertently, without any criminal intent or knowledge, then that would not be a violation of Section 9. There are exceptions in this bill under Section 10 for law enforcement purposes and for legitimate medical procedures, as were referred to by earlier witnesses. So those wouldn't be offenses under Section 9. But any type of intentional, knowing viewing of this material would be a violation.
So we're talking almost, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Yes.
I hate to use Jimmy Carter's expression, lusting in the heart, I take it. Some type of...
No, I don't think motive has anything to do with it. I think that the physical act of viewing with the intent to do that, to view it, without the application of one of the exemptions would be the crime. Like any crime, in order to be punished as a crime, the state has to plead and prove a culpable mental state, and that is usually either intentional or knowing, one or the other. And those knowing means there's a conscious objective to view it. Intentional means there's a conscious objective to view it, and knowing means there's an awareness of what it is and a willingness to continue with the act. So those are built into culpable mental states as currently used under Oregon criminal law, those concepts are. But to answer your question about how it compares to lusting in the heart, person's motive is irrelevant.
Yet at the same time, we're talking about mental states, so I assume we're going to have to use some type of visible conduct to prove that, because you can never determine what's...
Right. Now now you're getting into how does the state prove the intentional or knowing mental state, and that's always proved circumstantially, what the person was doing with the material as opposed to any direct statement by the person of intent. Obviously, if you had an admission or confession regarding that, that would prove the case, but ordinarily you wouldn't have that in a trial. You'd have to rely upon some type of inference from physical acts inferring that mental state.
One further question, Mr. Chairman.
Counsel.
Stephen, do you think there's any way that Section 9 could be amended to tighten this up? It's unlawful for any person to observe if we put something like to knowingly observe or to...
Well, that's...
Knowingly...
You don't have to put that in because that's required already. There's a statute in Chapter 161 that requires the state to plead and prove a culpable mental state if you want to treat it as a crime. So the state has to... Mm-hmm. Plead or and prove either knowing or intentional mental state.
Could a person commit this offense recklessly?
I believe that's an alternative mental state, yes, recklessly and criminal negligence.
Further question?
Counsel.
I know it may be another statute, but would maybe of assistance to police officers to have a something more specific in the statute. People like yourself who prosecute these cases all the time and deal in this area, that may be something that's understood, but for the average law enforcement official, it may not be. I represented a police department for 2 years, and I do know that oftentimes that they will go by what is specifically in the statute and apply it without any proper interpretation.
Well, I don't think that's a reason for that in itself would be a valid reason for amending it, especially this late in the session with what that would entail as far as the future of this bill. That's just not significant enough, I think, to justify an amendment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I hope I said that respectfully. I didn't mean to.
No problem.
We're all friends here.
Here.
Further questions from Mr. Pfeiffer? Keith, would you like to proceed? I do have a note. Let me indicate that one individual, Mr. Van Valkenburg, apparently needs to be in Portland by 5. That's probably going to be physically impossible. We're waiving that. Okay. Sorry. Keith, go ahead.
Thank you. May it please the chairman, members of the committee. My name is Keith Meisenheimer. I'm a senior deputy district attorney in Multnomah County. Most of the 10 years of my career have been spent in the area of juvenile court and child abuse. And I would like to concur with Mr. Pfeiffer's comments in his testimony, so I won't repeat that. I'll be very brief and just make a couple of additional comments. In the first place, I see Senate Bill 364 is having some advantages in that in broadening the scope and making the scope of deviant activity, which comes under the prohibition of the law, broader, we're also broadening the scope of what may be permissibly searched for and strengthening our ability to seek search warrants. And I think this can be particularly important because we've got to bear in mind we're not just talking about a private activity that hurts no one. In addition to the fact that the trade in pornography encourages the production of pornography, and obviously that means the molestation of children. The other point that I'd like to make is that when officers are able to obtain search warrants and to find this material, not infrequently they will find photographs of children who are currently being molested. And so this can become a vehicle for protection of individual children and the interdiction of a pattern of molestation that is currently going on. For that reason, again, it is, in my mind, is good public policy to be aggressive about trying to prohibit this kind of activity. A word on constitutionality. The concern is properly raised in legislative discussions of bills about whether or not they might be unconstitutional, and certainly there's been a lot of discussion with respect to this bill. But one thing I'd ask the committee to consider is to be somewhat aggressive about if it's good public policy, the courts will ultimately rule on whether or not it's constitutional, and these sections of the bills are severable. The courts do not rule a whole statute unconstitutional simply because one section may be. The main area of discussion around whether these provisions would be constitutional concerns the First Amendment, and as I understand it, the communication of ideas. And in my past discussions with those who are concerned about the constitutionality of laws against child pornography, I understand one of their concerns to be that you cannot prohibit the communication of ideas. My question, I think it's important to frame those issues in terms of some sort of individual facts, and my question is this. What is there in the photograph of an adult man raping a 5-year-old girl that communicates an idea worthy of constitutional protection? It seems to me when we ask the question in terms of sort of concrete terms about communication of ideas and child pornography, it gets very difficult to say that, yes, we're concerned about the ideas being communicated here and that we need the Constitution to protect that communication. Thank you.
Keith, can I, if you concluded there, can I ask how you would distinguish that from the constitutional protection, if any, of a written description of that same conduct? In other words, instead of a photograph, a written description of the same kind of conduct or activity.
It seems to me that there's a balancing going on, Mr. Chairman, and the balance for me there is that it doesn't take the molestation of a child to write about it. The photograph is produced by means of molestation of a child. And
right, and that's already against the law, clearly.
Well,
the molestation of a child.
And if we weren't talking about an activity that involves hurting children, I would not be before you asking that the law be strengthened.
That's understood. I guess my question, and we don't have to have a theoretical discussion, but
I suppose I don't know that I can make that.
Sexual stimulation would occur or could occur in either situation, which I guess is one of the evils or one of the concerns that's been expressed, or the way that we arrive at the definition of what it is that constitutes criminal conduct.
I think your point is well taken. It isn't easy to say that a photograph can't communicate an idea. But I think the distinction is in how it's produced. And I would argue that the idea of being communicated through a photograph of a man raping a child just simply is not one that... I mean, there are other kinds of communications that the Supreme Court has recognized are not protected by the Constitution, yelling fire in a theater. Maybe that could be argued to be intended to communicate some sort of a nihilistic idea. But when there is a... It seems to me that there is a balancing going on. And in this case, because we're talking about such a devastating damage to children, that's what I think tips the balance in favor of saying that this is not constitutionally worthy communication.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanlon, I'll recognize you in just a moment. Again, I don't want to necessarily digress here. We have, you know, our literature, for better or for worse, the literature of mankind, through its history, has had all kinds of written descriptions of the most incredible kinds of conduct. Some could say that the written descriptions of the horrors of the Holocaust, descriptions of how to build a nuclear bomb, descriptions of how to commit all kinds of terrible acts, poses a very difficult issue. I guess that's not a question, obviously. Representative Hanlon.
Well, just a comment on that, maybe to help out the discussion. Wouldn't really the conduct that you're trying to regulate primarily is to prohibit the use of children for these purposes? And in order to do so, since it appears there's been not great success in prohibiting those activities, the approach here is to cut off the market by prohibiting the dissemination or making that subject to criminal sanction. And in that way, I suppose it would differ from the written word, because it doesn't take the actual abuse of a child. I'm just following along the vein that you were speaking of, but I realize it's a difficult area with even if the state constitution were amended, it would be subject to interpretation under the federal constitution.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanlon, I would concur that that's correct. And I don't want to suggest this is an easy issue, but it's one of those, I think, many times in constitutional questions, we are trying to weigh the rights of some segments of our society with the rights of others.
Any further questions for Mr. Pfeiffer or for Mr. Meisenheimer?
Mr. Chairman, could I add one point?
Sure,
to the last?
Feel free.
There was testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the, I think this came primarily from Dr. Peter Shannon, who is a psychologist who treats primarily pedophiles. And his testimony was that one of the added dangers of child pornography is that it encourages pedophiles, after they've viewed the material and have achieved autoerotic satisfaction, to then go out and abuse a child. and sometimes for the first time, after they've seen the material. And so that's an added reason why the legislation is necessary, not just to protect the children who were used in the production of the material, but to protect future children who may be abused by pedophiles after using that material, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. I think I could extend the same logic and probably wipe out about half the children's television that exploits people sexually and exploits people in terms of violence as well. But that's another subject for another day, I guess. Appreciate your comments and your patience this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Simmons. Representative Minnis, if you'd like to join the senator, please feel free to do so.
Just so you know what you're talking about, take a look.
Don't pass it over here. I don't want it.
Well, Mr. Chair, the pictures we're passing around are some that have been confiscated in Oregon, and I want you to know that for each one of those pictures, there was at least one child sexually violated, and there seems to be very little reason for that. I'm going to try, because of the hour, for you and for me both, to be as brief as I can. I was asked last year to introduce this bill by the Child Protective Task Force, which is a loose-knit informal organization composed of representatives of the Oregon Attorney General's Office, the Oregon State Police, City of Portland Police, Multnomah County DA, Federal Customs, Post Office, FBI, and other police and prosecuting agencies, who felt that the existing Oregon statute was inadequate so far as providing protection of the children in Oregon against this kind of thing. And it's interesting that since I introduced the bill, I've had letters and telephone calls and personal visits from police agencies who have a problem, for example, in Baker, that they can't handle under the existing law, and from parents of victims who tell of what's been happening to their children and why can't we do something about it. I don't think I've had more letters and phone calls in my four sessions here than I've had on this bill. The Oregonian editorial was mentioned at one time. It was passed out on the Senate floor by Senator Frye when we were considering this bill on the floor, and it's rather easy to refute the parts that they make is that the bill might be justified if they could show us that there is current child pornography statutes that are inadequate. You've heard from the two attorneys and from the police agency saying that they are inadequate. The Oregonian mentioned that Multnomah County District Attorney's Office had testified that they had no case involving child pornographers under the current statute. So the reason they haven't had was explained to you. They can't make a case under the current statutes. They said that there were several constitutional roadblocks. Those of you who are attorneys know that there are two sides to every question, and some attorneys will say that there is no problem, and some say that there is. I've had informal conversations with Ed Peterson, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and with George Van Hoomison of the Court of Appeals, both of whom indicated that, in their opinion, the Henry case would not have come down as it did had it involved children. The sexual exploitation of children is more prevalent than we, I think, realize, much more so than I did before I got into this. We read in the milk cartons of the missing children, and many times these can be traced back to children who are kidnapped, photographed, and disposed of. You've heard of snuff films. I had heard of snuff films, but I didn't realize they could be in Oregon. But let me paraphrase a report from a police agency. A victim then, 15 years old, testified that her stepfather and unidentified others were involved in an organized pornography ring involving photography and murder. She states that on different occasions at a private residence, approximately an hour and a half drive from Portland, she was forced to participate in sexual activities involving young children 6 to 8 years of age of mixed races. At one time, a young black girl was tied to her in a sexual situation. An adult used a hammer to bludgeon the other girl to death. That's a snuff film. And I guess they sell for a fair amount of money to people who are perverted enough to run. Another man writing, he worked in Portland where he resided in Portland where he worked as an ice cream man in residential neighborhoods. He exploited a four-year-old girl and made his own child pornography of her. He frequented the hydro tubes at Washington Square in Portland and stalked children there, as well as at the Oregon Fair here in Salem. He wrote, "I just want to get one of these little girls and just touch her and lick her and suck her." He possessed child pornography upon his arrest and used to carry it with him. This was a man who was arrested under a federal charge. One of the witnesses mentioned a case in Sisters, Oregon recently. The man has been arrested again under a federal charge because he mailed some of the pornography. But he stated he loved young girls about 7 to 10 years of age. He had had sexual relationship with both of his daughters, starting with one at 6 until she matured. He sent a pornographic photograph of her with her vagina swollen and irritated. She appeared to be about 8. He doesn't want anything of value for his pornography. He's prowling for a young female child to have sexual relations with, currently looking at a single mother with preschool daughters. After 2 years of observation, he was finally arrested, but again on a federal charge. A woman living in a small community about 20 miles east of Salem came to my office recently. She reported that several children in the community had been taken by a babysitter to a house where they were sexually abused while being video recorded. These children ranged in age from 3 to 8. I've talked with Dr. Leon Harrington, a Salem physician who specializes in child psychiatry, who's treating some of these children. He told me it's not too difficult to treat the torn vaginas and torn rectums of the children, but that the abuse leaves lifelong psychic scars, which are much more difficult to treat. It could go on and on. I don't think there's any question but what there is a serious problem. I don't think there's any question but what this legislature should take this opportunity to rectify it if we can. If there is a question of the law of Senate Bill 364 being on the edge of constitutionality, my feeling at least is that we should go on the line that will protect our children. And if we step too far, let the courts tell us and send us back. If we do nothing, we've done nothing. And I think the Senate agreed, 28-0 was the vote on Senate Bill 364 when it passed out of the Senate. SJR came out, I think, 21-7. The strong feeling is that the legislature should get off our dime and do something to solve this problem, which is vital to the success of our society now. I have questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Simmons? If not, we'd certainly be glad to excuse you. You've been very patient. Spent, I know, much more of your afternoon than you intended up here, and we appreciate that very much.
I have a conference committee and a committee meeting this afternoon, but I felt that this was more important. And if I may add one more word, I do appreciate the courtesy and consideration of your committee taking your afternoon when I know you have other things to do to hear this bill. And I would only hope that in these waning days of the session that you can rectify the current situation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator. As you know, we only just received 364 just within the past day or two, of course. And as you know, the first item on this committee's agenda had been tort reform, and we hope we're successful on that as well. Thank you.
We'll try to help on that.
I understand. We hope to get to 9:15 this afternoon, but it may carry over till tomorrow. But one way or the other, that's also a priority for this committee. And
thank you.
Thank you. Representative Minnis?
Chairman, members of the committee, I, like Senator Simmons, appreciate the fact that you're hearing both. And I'm assuming this is a joint hearing on...
That's correct. Please feel free to address your comments to both matters if you wish.
I'm going to keep my comments pretty much restrained to Senate Joint Resolution 18. As you may recall, when it was originally introduced, there was another section of the bill that took into the language of Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution, essentially the language of the statute that described the criteria in the Miller case, Miller versus California, that established the ability under the United States Constitution to determine what is a contemporary state standard for pornography. That particular portion of the SDR 18 was stricken in the Senate Government Operations Committee, and now the bill itself is focused on the issue of child pornography. We have the Article 1, Section 8 as it appears in the Constitution now, but the amended language would say after the word whatever that except as otherwise provided in this section, and then going down to subsection 2, that nothing in this section affords protection to photographic displays of sadomasochistic abuse or sexual conduct of persons under 18 years of age, nor to live performances of sexual conduct. In any respect, it focuses on the issue of child pornography rather than adult pornography, so it has been restrained to that issue rather than dealing with the broadness of regulations and contemporary state standards dealing with adult pornography. Just as an example, I don't know if you have a legislative research report that was done at the request of Senator Larry Hill back in May dealing with an overview of legal concerns in pornography.
I don't believe we have that. If you have an extra copy.
I don't have an extra copy. The number is 87390, and I'm just going to use one excerpt from it. We'll make sure that you get copies of it to your committee. But back in... 1960, State versus Jackson. It was ruled by our Supreme Court that the law to prohibit the sale, distribution, or exhibition, of any obscene matter was not unconstitutionally vague. And now, in January of 1987, in State versus Henry, it struck down as unconstitutional state laws making it a crime to exhibit or sell sexually obscene material. In looking at Senate Joint Resolution, I guess in with respect to that, what I see is that we have gone from back in 1960, our Supreme Court saying that it is not unconstitutionally vague to have laws that govern these kinds of behaviors, these kinds of materials, under the same constitutional provision, Article 1, Section 8, to 1987, where under Article 1, Section 8, the current Supreme Court has ruled, in fact, that it is unconstitutional to prohibit this type of activity. But Senate Joint Resolution 18 deals with child pornography, and I want to bring to your mind the fact that what is being depicted in child pornography, pictures of children involved with adults in sexual conduct, is in and of itself illegal under other statutes with child abuse or sexual molestation, so on and so forth. It appears to me, is in terms of logic, that it should also be not a protected right to be able to mass produce these materials and subsequently distribute them either for profit or not for profit to other individuals who might have the same kind of prurient interest in those kind of materials. So I would encourage the committee to take a look at this particular piece of legislation, consider it with an open mind. I know that it's controversial. The debate in the Senate was about 2 hours. We've transcribed testimony of the floor debate there. It takes up 42 pages of typewritten testimony or speeches. It was controversial there, and no doubt it will be controversial here, too. But I do believe that it's an issue that is very important not only to the state, but to the communities at large. I don't know if you're going to have testimony from anyone from the federal agencies here, but it's unfortunate that much of the prosecution that goes on in the state goes on through U.S. Customs and through the federal statutes and through federal courts, because the Oregon courts and our current constitutional language as it's interpreted by the Supreme Court preclude an aggressive enforcement policy in this area. I want to give you, or at least read to you, a letter. I don't know if you have copies of this either, but it's an organization in Texas, Citizens for Decency Through Law, which was sent a copy of SGR 18 earlier. And in essence, their legal counsel, Benjamin Bull, sent a letter back that said that I have reviewed SGR 18 and support it completely. The amendment adopts the United States Supreme Court definition that has subsequently been restricted. But it goes on to say that the fact that Oregon presently has no control over obscenity and child pornography acts as a magnet for pornographers from all over the world. They will and are flocking to Oregon in droves because it is now a wide-open state. Without SJR 18, Oregon will become the Amsterdam of the United States. It also goes on to say that Amsterdam leads Europe in AIDS, teenage pregnancy, and prostitution, child pornography, and obscenity. Without the amendment, you're giving up your right to raise your children in a decent society, and I support the amendment completely. I want to go on to say that one of the members of the committee, who I believe is going to have some questions here, asked me to what degree should government, particularly law enforcement agencies, be involved in regulating the private activities, particularly the private sexual activities of adults. And my comment response to that was that when we have a situation where children are the object of sexual behavior and they are the victims of that behavior, and subsequently those pictures are all reproduced, sold, and transported throughout the state, traded throughout the state, to me, the rights of the individual child who's depicted in that picture and that activity, that child, to me, has a greater right to not have those pictures disseminated than does the individual who holds those pictures and subsequently reproduces and sends them out. My experience...
publication of the Center for Judicial Studies, Rice says, quote, "In any civilized society, there must be certain rules of conduct governing human behavior. Although we cherish individual freedom, we have never accepted the notion that it is absolute and without limitation. Despite the libertarian thrust of its opinions, even the Supreme Court of the United States has acknowledged the fact that total freedom would lead to anarchy and the death of freedom. As Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes rightly insisted, no one has the right to shout fire falsely in a crowded theater. We concerned women for America are in favor of freedom of speech, but only up to a point. That point, any point, presupposes a standard of excellence, a standard of right and wrong. Without such a standard, we become barbarians, enslaved to the passions and self-gratification of those in power. A standard of excellence is assumed in the powerful words engraved in this Capitol building. The mind of man, this is a quote, you're probably familiar with this. The mind of man knows no employment more worthy of its power than the quest of righteousness in human affairs. No goal of its labors that is superior to the discovery of the good in the guidance of life. We urge the legislature to adopt Senate Joint Resolution 18, to write laws which will reflect the standard of excellence as they define and control pornography. We urge the legislature to allow local communities their rights to free speech. The 1986 Pornography Commission's report pointed out, quote, a citizen's right to free speech means that he can organize and speak out even against those pornographic materials that are not prescribed by law, but he does not want to be in his community, unquote. I conclude with a brief look at the term standard of excellence. To speak of a standard of excellence in the abstract is not very helpful. The quest of righteousness, the discovery of the good and the guidance of life, these are noble-sounding phrases, but they remain empty, meaningless phrases until we give them meaning. Will our quest of righteousness and the discovery of the good lead us to encourage the violence and degradation of pornography? Concerned Women for America urge us instead to seek righteousness and goodness in our Christian heritage. That is not causing government to establish a religion. Rather, it is recognizing that the standard of excellence is not made by one man or even by a group of men. The standard has been made and given to us by God. To those who advocate pornography, Concerned Women for American Oregon encourage them to exchange their enslavement and addiction to pornography and the money it produces or for whatever for the freedom and righteousness found in Jesus Christ. All of us, they and we, men, women, and children, would be a lot happier and healthier if they did. Thank you. Now, that was from Sammy Nelson. Those also speak my views as well, although I'm not officially a Concerned Woman for America. I'm in the process of becoming one. I was not aware of this Bill 364 myself, but I do speak to that as well. I am not an intellectual, but I am not stupid. And I have, in the last month, become very aware of things that are extremely upsetting to me, as you probably can tell. And Lord willing, I have made a commitment that I will go into my neighborhoods, to my neighbors, to my neighbors' neighbors, to their neighbors, and I will make known to them what's going on in regard to pornography and anything else that would take away from life itself and the quality of life, of excellence and what's good and what's right. And I might add that I'm going to be very alert, Lord willing, and aware of those people who vote, the way they vote, the elected officials, you, who are representing us. And I know I'm not the only one that you're representing, but I'm going to be paying close attention to that. And I'm hopefully going to help others become much more aware of some of the degrading things that are going on and that are very painful and that would take away from my children and hopefully from my children's children. And I would be very happy to answer any questions if you have any. And I want to thank you again for letting me speak to you, Chairperson Representative Springer. I am learning how to be appropriate at this, and maybe in time I will sound like I'm used to it.
You did just fine. Did you have any copies you wanted to share with us?
I do.
Okay, if you'd just share those with one of us, and we'll make sure they're distributed and made a part of the record. Were there any questions for Ms. Rinaldi? If not, thanks again very much. Is Mike Decker with us? I believe it's Decker. He did. Okay, my apologies. I'm sorry. If Mr. Decker wanted to submit anything in writing, we'd be glad to receive that, of course, make that part of the record. How about Dr. Haug? Or is it Hoagie? I can't read very well here.
Oh, I'm happy to respond to any of those. I usually pronounce it Hoag, but
Hoag, okay.
I'm Dr. James B. Hoag of Salem. I am the president of the Citizens for Decency Through Law, Salem chapter. You heard from our national offices' opinion regarding these bills. I very much appreciate your hearing what we have to say and those expert gentlemen who have gone before me. I certainly could add nothing to that. My only addition is that we citizens are very much concerned about the problem. We would very much appreciate your helping us by passing this bill. We are all of the opinion from all the expert testimony we have, this would be a very helpful bill in saving lives and making our state a safer place in which to live. Appreciate your help in any way you can be.
Thank you, Dr. Hoag. Are there any questions? If not, thank you again, sir. I have, and perhaps I should ask, is it Ruth Hoag, if you wanted to come up, or would you like to just be recorded on record as supporting... Okay, we'll so note for the record that Mrs. Hoag's comments would be an endorsement of those comments just recorded by Dr. Hoag. Thank you. Dr. Gordon Ray?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I am Reverend Gordon Ray, and an ordained Baptist minister for 54 years and a private Christian educator across this country and in the Orient for over a half century. I apologize for a little bit of a nervous problem, which my neurologist tells me is just on account of being 100 years old. A slight exaggeration. But I'd like to go on record as saying, first of all, that I support, to the best of my recollection, everything that has been said today in support of both 364 and Senate Joint Resolution 18. I have five living children and nine beautiful grandchildren. This tends to intensify my interest in the issues before us, and plus the fact that I worked with young people all my life and still am. Because I came to Salem in 1969 with Western Baptist College out on Deerfield, Deer Park Drive. And I currently, after retiring from foreign missionary service and Bible college teaching, and most recently, administration of a Christian high school that I founded and led for 10 years. Still very busy, about as busy as ever, because my wife and I are homeschooling eight of our nine grandchildren in our home. And so, as I said, you can see why I would be interested in child pornography and its curbing and eventual extermination if possible, although in this world that we're living in, that's expecting almost too much, but that doesn't keep us from trying to do everything we can in the right direction. I learned only an hour before we came here that we would have this privilege, and so I have no prepared statement. I just have a lot of things on my heart that I would like to express. But I don't want to take the time that it would require to express everything on my heart, so I'll try to wrap this up quickly now. I think, I personally feel, and I don't think you would debate this, the fact that the cross-section of our populace would stand very overwhelmingly against pornography. In fact, all of you legislators who vote on this thing, and even our ACLU friend speaking a while ago says, we're all against child pornography. But the expression balances was used here today. And I think there has to come a time, even as our Constitution recognizes, when we use common sense in the interpretation of our legislation. I recall even seeing a while back in a movie about the San Francisco earthquake that late in the day, when they were despairing of stopping the fires, they resorted to dynamiting people's property. Well, anybody knows it's against the law to go out and dynamite somebody's building. But they had to do that because the stakes were greater than the laws in this case. We also have laws against killing but there come times in war when we conscript and enlist men and train them, put a uniform on them, a gun in their hands, and send them out to kill people. And so I think we have to interpret these things in the light of circumstances and contexts and emergencies that arise. And the Word of God says that the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. And so if we are concerned only with the letter of the law here and overlook the stakes in this issue, why, we have failed in the opportunities that we have to effect remedies. Now, in child pornography, who are the victims? I think immediately we'd say the children are the victims in child pornography. But they're not the only victims. The parents, the grandparents, the siblings, the extended family, the neighbors, the relatives, the friends, and in fact the country at large is victimized by this holocaust of a kind that has invaded the home and invaded the lives of our children. Now, if the children are the victims, they're defenseless. They can't do anything about the problem. And so they have to look to the adults. And who are the adults? We are the adults, the citizenry. But if passing laws is going to be part of the remedy, the citizenry doesn't have the answer. We, in turn, have to look to you, our legislators, whom we have elected and sent to the legislature to pass those laws. And we have sent you there to represent us, and we are begging you to represent us in this thing, which I think we will all agree is anti-pornographic. And again, I say, let's let balance have its proper place. My last word is this. SDR 18 suggests in paragraph 2 that we submit this to the electorate for a referendum in our next statewide election. We have a democratic process. What is anybody afraid of in letting the people speak? So let's let the people speak. Personally, I have no question how it would speak, but let's give them a chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Ray. Were there any questions? If not, thank you. We had a couple members who got called to the floor. The House is continuing to meet now, and they had to carry bills, and one or more of us may be called away also. So I just wanted to explain those circumstances to you. Dora Maxwell, is Ms. Maxwell here? Or did you have anything additional to add, Ms. Maxwell? Or okay, Ms. Maxwell would like to be recorded on the record as endorsing the position stated by Mr. and Mrs. Hogan, also Reverend Ray. Thank you, Ms. Maxwell. Geneva Martin.
I'm Geneva Martin from Staten, Oregon, and I hope that what I have to say will be more important than my shaky voice, because I too, this is the first time for me to testify, although I've been up here several times, and I've called almost all of you. My representative is Jeff Gilmore.
Can we call him up here, or have you had a chance to talk?
I've already cornered him. If I come up here anymore, I may have to give it a lobbyist license or whatever you get. I'm a licensed nurse here in Oregon, and from 70 to 72, I worked as in the pediatric of Salem Hospital. And that's working with children, and I've seen a lot of abused children. In fact, that's one reason that I had to take a leave of absence, because of an abused child that died shortly after she was brought in. So I took a leave of absence, and then I went back to work there on an orthopedic floor, which is much different. So what I have to say today is that we're all aware that this is this session is shortly going to close, so I urge you to pass this bill, SB 364, and also I didn't know about the SJR 18, but I'd like to sign that too before I leave. And I've sat in on the hearings, the Senate hearings, and this is a major step in dealing with this type of perverts. And I call them perverts because that is exactly what they are. And I feel that this form of punishment wouldn't be even severe enough for the harm that they inflict on innocent children. Because after a child has been exposed to this, they are scarred for life, and it takes a miracle of their healing, of healing of their minds and emotions to occur. And if that doesn't happen, then all they have to look for is a life filled with psychoanalysis sessions, and then they distrust all adults for the rest of their life. And I just want to say that if we continue to fail to protect those that depend on us so much, then God help us. So I urge you to vote yes on SB 364 and to get this to the House as quickly as possible, and also SJR 18. And that's the end of my statement, but I'd like to ask you a question after you ask me anything.
Well, I'll have to be as polite as I can and let you know that if you have any inquiries for the chair about scheduling, please feel free to contact me. But any further scheduling will be done only after I've had a chance to confer with the members of the subcommittee and the full committee. So if your question is about further scheduling, I can't give you an answer because I have not had that opportunity. If you wish to contact my office or the committee, please feel free to do so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Were there any questions for Ms. Martin? If not, we appreciate your patience, particularly this afternoon. We have also, I believe, Robert Nordfeldt.
I'm Robert Nordfeldt. I am a citizen of the state of Oregon that is retired. I have been hearing, particularly from the opponents of SJR 18, that it is a threat to freedom. I cannot see that threat or any danger whatsoever. For the state of Oregon, the people of the state of Oregon, have the absolute right to amend their constitution and repeal any amendment to which they subsequently object. This should be their prerogative. And I feel that SJR 18 should be approved and sent to the people. They are the final authority and should be permitted to vote on it. This is such an important issue that I am almost speechless. You find that the Section 8 of Article 1 contains a very significant clause, but every person shall be held responsible for abuse of this freedom. That is as important as the other part, the part which describes that freedom. Perhaps we should take note that child pornography in particular is the most gross abuse possible of the freedoms granted in Section 8 of Article 1. Thank you. Is there any, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Nordven. Thank you particularly for your patience this afternoon staying with us. Any questions? If not, were there any other folks who wish to testify on either bill? Any further business to come before the subcommittee? If not, we'll be adjourned, and I'd remind members that we're still in session on the floor and may have some bills to carry once we return.